Blog Talk Radio.
Coming live from Pittsburgh, Benson's next to bring Major League Baseball and all related things. Inside MLB, Inside MLB.
Good evening, Inside MLB fans. Well, good afternoon. My name is Benson Fechter, and I will be your host today. It is Friday, July 29th, 2016. We have a very exciting show to get to today. And before we get started, I'd like to thank a special listener, Savannah. Thank you for tuning in. And as a new baseball fan, I hope that you do continue to tune in, because I try my hardest to give you all a good show, and I hope that you like it. All right, so let's get in, and we are going to talk a little bit about the Pirates. Okay, right now, they are sitting in a little bit of a rough position. They're two games back in the Marlins and the Cardinals right now, who are both tied for the second wild card spot, and they also are going to have to leapfrog the Mets. So the wild card spot is definitely very interesting right now. You have the Dodgers, Cardinals, Marlins, Mets, and the Pirates. Those are really the five teams vying for two spots. Now, the Dodgers, I think they are going to get a wild card spot. They do have the pieces to make a trade, so we'll see if that happens before the 4 p.m. deadline on Monday. And I think they'll make the playoffs, right? The Marlins, they are an interesting case, though, because it feels like, to me, they always are around there. They were around there a couple years ago. They are around there this year, and they just made a big move to get Andrew Cashner. So that's going to they're going to fight for the playoffs, and they just showed that today when they made that big trade. And then the St. Louis Cardinals, they are always right there. Last year, winning 100 games, and again, the NL Central is right up there with the Pirates, the Cardinals, and the Cubs, and all vying for playoff spots. Now, I do not believe it will be like last year when all three teams made the playoffs, or like in 2013 when the Pirates, Reds, and the Cardinals made the playoffs, but I do think that one of the two will make it. So that sort of thins it down to me. It's going to be the Dodgers or the Giants, whoever loses that division, I believe, and the Pirates or the Cardinals, whoever comes in second place. Now, the Marlins, they could still improve, and they have shown that they are capable of being a great team when their offense is on and when their young pitching is doing well. I think the Andrew Cashner addition will work out for them. Now, they did give up Jared Kozar for him, and Jared Kozar has been a nice, solid starter for him, for the Marlins, and Carter Capps, who has been solid at the end of the bullpen. So they are getting Andrew Cashner, the main piece of the trade, but they are giving up quite a bit to get him. So we'll see how all of that works out right now. And a little bit of the bigger talk about the Marlins. We all know Ichiro, 2,998 hits. He is two-way, and he'll be starting tonight. And I actually have the pleasure of going to the game in Miami tonight. So I would definitely be very excited. And hopefully Ichiro will get his 3,000th hit. Now we have tickets for all weekend. So hopefully he gets it this weekend, because that would be an amazing feat to watch. And so that's sort of the Marlins spiel there. Now let's talk a little bit about the Mets. And the Mets, they are sort of, I think, backtracking to last year before they made the trade for Yoenis Cespedes. They are not playing well right now, 4-6 in the last team. They've lost two straight games. And Jerry Familia, who saved, I think, 53 straight games in a row, doesn't save a game two nights ago, can't save the game last night, and you might wonder what psychologically is going on with him and if he'll be able to bounce back, because the Mets bullpen, it is a bit of a mess. Besides Addison Reed and Jerry Familia, it is a little bit rough sailing if you can't get the ball to them. Their bullpen isn't that good, and it's just the case. Antonio Bastardo, also a nice piece there, but hasn't been the same compared to last year when he was with the Pirates. And speaking of the Pirates, I think they are poised to make a playoff run, because compared to other teams, they don't have to make much outside moves to make the playoffs. They can improve internally. And let's go through their lineup a little bit and talk about how each player is doing, how they can improve, and so on and so forth. We'll start with the shortstop position, Jordy Mercer. He has been great. He has a great glove. He had a great game on Wednesday night. He was 3-for-5, scored 3 runs, and had an RBI. So he was great there. He has a great arm, great range. So Jordy Mercer, been solid. He bats leadoff against left-handed pitchers most of the time. Right-handed batter pitchers, John Jason mostly leads off. But he definitely moves a lot from like the 7 and 8 spot up to the leadoff. And he's versatile with that. And he he collects his RBIs and he does what he does for the Pirates. Now, David Freese, he doesn't really start. He does play a little bit of every position, really. He can play first. He can play second. He can play third. He's played all of those positions so far this year. And he has been absolutely great off the bench. And the Pirates bench has been one of the best benches in baseball, including guys like David Freese, Matt Joyce, who has just been an absolutely classic pinch hitter. And he also is great when he starts, gives Cutch, Marte, and Polanco days off here and there. And also, recent recall, Adam Frazier has been amazing too. I think he has a .350 batting average, and he just seems like he's been in the big leagues for so long. He has a nice left-handed bat. He has tremendous speed, and he will be there for a while. And actually, Neil Huntington, he compared him to guys like Brock Holt and Josh Harrison. Brock Holt, when he first came up with the Pirates, he sort of played all around the field. And then they traded him to Boston for Mark Melancon. And they also, Joel Hanrahan was also in that deal. Then a guy comes up, Josh Harrison, and he sort of plays all around the field. And now he's solidified at second base, used to be solidified third baseman. But Adam Frazier does remind me a lot of Brock Holt. He does remind me a lot of Josh Harrison, and he can play all around the infield. He can play in the outfield. He hits for average speed. Just a perfect utility guy that can come off the bench and spot start here and there. Now, I think if the Pirates are going to go out and make a move, I think that Adam Frazier could definitely be a part of that deal. I know they are trying to go after some Rays pitchers, Matt Moore, Jake Odorizzi, and possibly Chris Archer. Nathan Eovaldi is also on that list. But Chris Archer, I heard that they want Glasnow and Meadows for Archer. Now, I don't think the Pirates should make that deal. Glasnow, he is supposed to be one of the better pitchers in baseball. He hasn't really showed it in the big leagues so far. And when he had that injury problem a couple starts back, now he's on the DL with right shoulder discomfort. But he actually will resume throwing today. And I think Glasnow has a great future. And this rotation can have a great future if he can improve. I don't think Glasnow will be like Gerrit Cole of 2013 when he locked it down and helped the Pirates go on to the NLDS Game 5 against the Cardinals. But I do think that next year he could be that type of guy. And this rotation is starting to look very exciting, Pirates fans. You get Gerrit Cole when he's on. Jameson Taillon has been great this year. Tyler Glasnow, I think he will be great next year. And then if Liriano, if he can get his swings and misses when he's pitching, he can also be great. He just struggles sometimes with his command. But when he is on, he can be great. And also, the rotation is now starting to look a little bit packed now because of all the stars that have started. And actually, Stephen Brault will be taking the mound tonight against Guerra and the Brewers at 8:10 p.m. Eastern. And the rotation just – I couldn't be more excited about the young pitching that is coming up and how many guys have made their debuts. You have Jameson Taillon, Stephen Brault, Tyler Glasnow, Chad Cool. And Chad Cool, he was actually supposed to start tonight but is having some injury problems, I believe, in Indianapolis AAA. But he will also be a part of the rotation down the stretch. And it is nice, though, because we have so many – long relievers out of the pen. Jeff Locke, he can work out of the bullpen, and he has been great when he has done that. Jonathan Neese, ever since he moved to the bullpen, he has been locked down. And then Juan Nicasio, he started off the season as a starter. He dominated spring training, striking out so many people, and he has come in from the bullpen when the starters have not done well, and he can pitch 3-4 innings at a time and help the Pirates out a lot. So that's nice. You get guys Jeff Locke, John Neese, and Juan Nicasio, they're versatile, and they are humble with it, too. They don't say they want to be a starter or a bullpen guy. They'll do whatever Clint Hurdle and Neil Huntington asks of them, and that's really what is important as a ball player. And the bullpen is definitely one of the strong suits for the Pirates. You go through there, especially the back end, Mark Melancon, he is absolutely as shut down as it gets out of the bullpen. His cutter is great. His curveball is amazing, and when he comes onto the field, the Pirates don't lose. In fact, 75 straight games that Mark Melancon has come on to attempt to save, the Pirates have not lost. That's not saying he hasn't blown a save or anything here or there, but they, when it goes to extras, they don't lose. And he has just been dynamo out of the bullpen. And I hear there are actually a lot of trade rumors going around about Mark Melancon, but I do not think the Pirates should sell on him. The Nationals, I know, are going after him a little bit. Also, Wade Davis of the Royals, they're looking at. But the Pirates are poised to make a playoff run, and they need a back-end closer to help them out. I know Tony Watson and Neftali Feliz, they can shut down games, but the depth won't be the same. And Pirates starting pitching, it is young, so the bullpen has been depended on a lot. And if they do decide to trademark Melancon, I just don't think it would be in the best interest of the Pittsburgh Pirates. Now, I know it will be hard to re-sign him at the end of this year, but if the Pirates believe that they can make a playoff run and they can possibly go for a World Series, because once you're in it, I mean, you saw the Giants in 2014. They went from the fifth spot to winning 88 games to a World Championship team, and I definitely do believe that the Pirates can win enough games to make the playoffs. And Mark Melancon will be a pivotal part of that going down the stretch. Neftali Feliz out of the bullpen, he's been mainly a seventh-inning guy. He can work with eighth as well. And he's also a former closer, so he definitely can handle pressure-filled situations. And he also does have playoff experience, so that helps out too. He isn't the flamethrower that he used to be, but he definitely can still throw hard. And he definitely has found himself, I think, in Pittsburgh this year. Ray Searage, another great reclamation project with him. And Tony Watson has been steady as it gets. He's been shaky here and there, but definitely one of the better left-handed pitchers out of the bullpen that can come in late and shut down the eighth inning, and that's what he has done for the Pirates this year and what he will continue to do. Then you get Jared Hughes, who is a sinker ball pitcher. He gets the ground balls. He hasn't been as effective this year, but he has come into some pressure situations. He's gotten that double play, and he just throws a sinker, and they swing in it, ground ball. He has definitely been a solid pitcher. And as I talked about, the long relievers, Juan Nicasio, Jonathan Neese, Jeff Locke, they have been great out of the bullpen for the Pirates as well. So the pitching, I am definitely very excited about. And Gerrit Cole was absolutely amazing on Wednesday. So his first career complete game, went 9 innings, 3 hits, only allowed 1 run and hit a batter, struck out 6, and no walks. So definitely very impressed from that outing by Gerrit Cole, and hopefully that's what we'll see in the future for him, because if the Pirates are going to make a playoff run, he needs to lock it down at the front of the rotation. He needs to be the guy that the Pirates can depend on to get 6, 7, possibly 8 innings pitched every 5 days that he takes a mound. And if he can do that, he can be fantastic, and the rotation just gets that much better. So I love the pitching. The offense, it definitely can improve, but it definitely, when it's on, it is definitely on. But the one area I do think that can improve is the third spot in the lineup. And we all know who that is, Andrew McCutchen. He has struggled this year, but he continues to say, yes, I'm struggling. I will struggle, but I will not quit. And that's the mentality that he has to have. He had a good game on Wednesday when the Pirates defeated the Mariners 10-1. He was 3-for-5, 2 runs scored, and 4 RBIs. He had sort of a game-sealing 3-run home run in the 8th inning that made it 10-1 and sort of sealed the deal. It was already sealed after that, but he also had a big a double in the third inning that accounted for part of his RBIs, and he had a single in the seventh. The first inning at bat, he struck out, and in his fifth inning at bat, he bounced out to third. But ultimately, it was definitely a great game for him. And Starling Marte, all-star Starling Marte, he has been great. He is as good as it gets in left field defensively. He won a Gold Glove last year for that, and he has been great offensively. He hits for average, and when he gets on first base, there is no doubt in anybody's mind that he's going to steal. On whoever pitcher and whatever situation, if he is on first and nobody's on second, one, two, or no outs, any inning of any game, he will attempt a steal at second base. It's not a matter of when it will happen and when. It's not a matter of if it will happen. It's a matter of when it will happen. And Starling Marte is just one of the speediest guys in baseball. And it's actually going to be fun to watch tonight. Starling Marte and Jonathan Villar, they played couple weeks ago, and they were going back and forth who was having the stolen base lead, and that's gonna be fun to watch tonight. Marte gets on base, he passes VR. VR gets on base, he passes Marte, and it's just gonna be a great down the road for that about 6 hours from now. And let's talk a little about Jung Ho Kang. He is definitely an interesting case. When he came back against Cardinals, he had two home runs in that game, but he has definitely struggled since then. And I don't know really what it is, but he just is struggling to find himself, I think. He is great at third base, definitely a lockdown defender, and he is used to playing shortstop, so he definitely can play third base and lock it down there. He has great range, has a great arm, and he actually made a great play in the what inning was that? That was the seventh inning when there were definitely a lot of good plays that inning. Josh Harrison made a nice play. He never gave up on the ball to get Adam Lind. Then Leonis Martin, he drove a ball deep to right field. Sean Rodriguez, another great bench player who can play all over the place, went back against the wall, and he jumped up against the wall, and he caught it. And then Mike Zunino came up, hit a ball hard down the third baseline. Jung Ho Kang dived to his right, and he made a solid throw to David Freese, who had to niftily catch it, but he got Mike Zunino out, so that's all that matters there. And then Francisco Cervelli, he's back, and he is solid when batting. He is a great catcher behind the plate, and he's definitely an animated character, and I think that's a perfect character for Pittsburgh. And as a catcher, I couldn't ask for more out of him. Sean Rodriguez, as I was saying, he's been a great bench player. He's turned it around this year. I was a bit skeptical about why they brought him back this year, but I'm not skeptical about that at all now, because he can play everywhere. His bat has been great. He plays about every game. He comes in late in games to take over for John Jaso at first base, and he can start anywhere on the field. And actually, he is one position shy of playing every single position in Major League Baseball. He just needs to pitch. And if we rewind the clock a little bit back to when the Giants were in town, I believe they beat them 15-4. They actually had Eric Kratz, who is no longer a part of the Pirates, pitch that game instead of Sean Rodriguez. But I bet you he'll get his time. Maybe not this year, but it could be next year. So, definitely very exciting things to go with the Pirates. And if they do decide to get a starter, I would be enthused about that, because that just makes the rotation and the bullpen that much better. And one thing that I do want to decide, because the first 100 games, actually 101, no, 100 games, yes, they are over. So there are 62 games remaining for the Pirates. And I just want to talk about who's the Pirates' MVP. Is it Starling Marte, or is it somebody else? Starling Marte, he has been great. He's been able to hit for average, but the power has not been there. The RBIs really haven't been there. He has 35 RBIs, I think, and Jordy Mercer actually has more RBIs than him. David Freese, he has been good. And if you look at value, most valuable player, I'm actually going to have to give this award to David Freese because of just how the Pirates, they picked him up so late in the offseason, and he played third base for most of April and a little bit of May because Jung Ho Kang was out, and he has been able to be solid since then. So I'm giving the MVP award to the first 100 games to David Freese because of the value that he brings to the Pirates, not just because of numbers or anything, but simply because of the value that he brings to the Pirates. And Andrew McCutchen, he actually had a special home run the other night. He passed Dave Parker in the all-time Pirates home run list. And so he definitely is going to go down, I think, as one of the best Pirates of all time. And it just depends if the Pirates can re-sign him to another team-friendly contract. And if they can do that, then he will definitely go down as one of the best Pirates of all time, and I am excited to see what he does down the stretch, because when Andrew McCutchen turns it on, and I know he will turn it on sometime this year, it will definitely be very exciting for the Pirates, because the offense is just going to get so much better. The lineup is already so potent, and now that they have Cervelli back, and if McCutchen can get better, it will definitely be a scary lineup. It could be one of the best offenses in baseball, and I'm very excited to see what they can do with that. So we're going to have to take a quick break on Inside MLB. But when I come back, we're going to give some trade deadline predictions. And I think the rich are going to get richer, and All-Stars will be on the move very soon. Back in Inside MLB, and we just talked a little bit about the National League wildcard race, a little bit about the Pirates and how they are doing. So now I want to talk about what's coming up, and that's a trade deadline. And I am going to give some predictions. And with the trade deadline approaching, I sort of asked myself to really cut to the chase, and I'm going to tell all of you what baseball will look like when the clock strikes 4 p.m. Eastern on Monday. I'm going to tell you what I see happening. The power moves are going to come from the power teams. And I think All-Stars will be finding new homes and just a lot more. Here is what I'm going to say. So let's start with Wade Davis and where he is going to go. And I think there are really two places that I think he could go. I think it could either be Texas or I think it could either be Washington. Washington has definitely gone after him strong. And Lucas Giolito, number one pitching prospect for them, has definitely been a part of those talks. So that is definitely going to be a likely possibility. And the Rangers, if they do get Wade Davis, he'll stay in the American League, and I think it'll be a more comfortable position for him. And I think that Wade Davis is probably going to end up on the Nationals. That would be my most likely scenario for me. And I think the team that will make the biggest splash before the end of the deadline, though, I think it's going to be the Rangers. We'll get into who will be going to the Rangers in a little bit, but I think they will make the biggest splash. But overall, no matter what the Rangers do, the Cubs are going to be the best team after the deadline. It's just the truth. And we all know, even Wade Davis is going to be moved. Andrew Miller is probably going to be moved. And Luke Crow will probably be moved as well. But no matter what team they go to, what solid team they go to, no team is going to be better than the Cubs. And I think the Nationals, they are also going to make a pretty big splash. And it could be Wade Davis, as we talked about. So that all is a possibility. So now let's talk a little bit about the dark horse. Who will be the surprise player that's going to be traded. And I sort of came up with five candidates for that. And the candidates for me are Matt Kemp, Edinson Volquez, Mark Melancon, Jerks and Profar. My bad. Not five. Four. Now, the dark horse or the surprise player to be traded, I think most likely out of the Matt Kemp, Enson Volquez, Mark Melancon, and Jerks and Profar is going to be Mark Melancon, I believe. And the Pirates farm system is already, I think, the best in baseball. And they could definitely get a starting pitcher for Mark Melancon. And it could just be a case of a contending team helping out a contending team in this scenario. I think he could end up on the Nationals, and that could definitely be a big splash for the Nats. And we'll see what the Nats give back to the Pirates. But I think Mark Melancon, it's going to surprise a lot of people, but I do believe that he will be traded by Monday at 4 p.m. And ultimately, we need to talk about the shot player most that is likely to stay. And Chris Sale, he has definitely been the talk. Who will he be going to? Jay Bruce has also been shopped around a little bit, and Chris Archer has also been shopped around. But ultimately, I think that Chris Sale, he's not going anywhere. I don't see the reason for him to go anywhere from the White Sox perspective. And I don't think that a team is going to give up five top prospects for Chris Sale. We talked about on Wednesday what it would take to get Chris Sale, but I don't think any teams are going to be willing to give up what Rick Hahn is asking for. It's just not, I think, in the best interest for any contending teams that want Chris Sale. So next, we all know the July 31st trade deadline. Yes, that is coming up. But we also know that there is a waiver trade deadline. And I think there are two big names that could be traded between August 1st and August 31st. They are Carlos Beltran and Jay Bruce. Now, Jay Bruce has been shopped around a lot, and I think he most likely will stay with the Reds through September, through the rest of the year. But I think Carlos Beltran will probably be the biggest name traded in the waiver deal. So those are, I'll call it to move or not to move. Those are my three picks there. And now let's talk about what uniform will Jonathan Lucroy, Jay Bruce, Ryan Braun, and Andrew Miller be wearing on August 2nd. Let's talk about Jonathan Lucroy first. And without a doubt in my mind, he will not be a Brewer. It's just not going to happen. I don't think. And I think at the end of the day, I think there are two teams that he could possibly go to. I think they are the Indians, and I think they are the Rangers. Which team will he go to, though? And that's definitely the same with me. I think he'll go to the Indians, actually, and I think it would be exciting if he went to the Indians, too, because their pitching is so good, and adding Lucroy to that pitching staff and adding his bat into the lineup will definitely be very exciting, and the Indians, they could be a serious team if Jonathan Lucroy does decide, if the Brewers decide to ship Jonathan Lucroy to Cleveland, and it could definitely be a very exciting team if that is the case. I think the Rangers, I don't think they'd be willing to give up any of their big names like Gallo or Profar to give to the Brewers if the Rangers wanted Jonathan Lucroy badly enough. Okay, so let's talk about Jay Bruce now. What team will he end on? I already said that he's most probably going to stay on the Reds. But I know the Dodgers, they are looking at him hard. The Mariners could possibly be a team. But at the end of the day, I just don't think he's going anywhere. I think the Reds, I just don't think any team is going to give up what the Reds are asking for Jay Bruce. And in my opinion, he will be a Red on August 2nd. Ryan Braun, he has been shopped around a little bit. But honestly, there is just no chance in my mind that any team will give what the Brewers are asking for Ryan Braun. So he'll definitely be a Brewer on August 2nd. Andrew Miller, I think it's either he stays with the Yankees in my mind or he goes to the Rangers. But I also know that the Nationals rumors are saying that it was offered Andrew Miller for Lucas Giolito straight up. I don't know what the Yankees will think about that trade. But at the end of the day, I think August 2nd, Andrew Miller will still be a Yankee. So I know it's kind of a bummer that I didn't move Jay Bruce, Ryan Braun, or Andrew Miller around a lot. But I think that Jonathan Lucroy is a sure bet that he's leaving. And I like having my predictions right. And that's what I think on the trade deadline. So those are my predictions. I thank you for staying to them. And if you have any predictions, we'll gladly take those in the chat room. And if you disagree with any of mine, that could also be said in the chat room. Okay, we need to take a quick break on Inside MLB. When we come back, we're going to be talking a little about the Marlins and the Cashner trade. Seven-player trade, blockbuster. We'll talk about that next. Back on Inside MLB, and I just got some news for you. The Yankees are saying that they would not accept a Lucas Giolito for Andrew Miller trade straight up. That is breaking news from MLB Network itself. So I just got that, and you are hearing it for yourself right now. Again, Yankees will not accept a trade Lucas Giolito for Andrew Miller straight up. So that's that with the trade deadline, and we are going to move to a trade that happened at the trade deadline, and that is the Marlins getting Andrew Cashner and Colin Ray from the Padres for some prospects. And I think the Miami Marlins, definitely they bolstered their starting rotation, and they got some much-needed reinforcements today. They acquired right-handers Andrew Cashner and Colin Ray in a seven-player trade with the San Diego Padres, and their starting rotation it needed to be bolstered. Listen, Jose Fernandez, he is great, but Y.N. Chen is dealing with some injury problems. Adam Conley, he has been solid, but they definitely needed some pitching. And Andrew Cashner and Colin Ray are going to come to the rescue for them. And I think it is going to be great. Now, the Marlins did give up a lot, and we'll get into that in a second. But they definitely needed these reinforcements if they're going to make a playoff run and they're going to make a run at the NL East. And just a little bit of going off track here for a second. But the Giants, they plan to activate outfielder Hunter Pence, who has been having hamstring problems this weekend, according to the San Francisco Chronicle. He's expected at AT&T Park today. So that's good news for the Giants there. So let's get back to the Andrew Cashner talk, right? And the Marlins, they definitely were eager to shore up their rotation for a playoff push. They will also be receiving pitching prospect Teron Guerrero and cash considerations for right-handers Jared Kuzar and Carter Capps in two minor leaguers, pitching prospect Luis Castillo, and first baseman Josh Naylor. And I think it was smart that they were eager to shore up their rotation because the Marlins, they actually have been getting pretty decent attendance for their standards with this whole Ichiro Suzuki 3,000 hits thing. Now, they probably, after Ichiro gets 3,000, I think the fans, they're not going to come out as much. But they definitely want to make a playoff push for their fans because the tickets have just not been sold because they have just been a mess of a franchise. But this is so showing some solidity. It's showing that they are into this. They want to make a playoff push. And Andrew Cashner and Colin Ray, they are going to help them get the playoff push. And the Marlins, they did give up a lot. So Teron Guerrero, good pitching prospect. He'll be coming to Miami too. But they did give up Jared Kuzar, and they did give up Carter Capps. Jared Kuzar, he's been a solid starter this year. So they are solidifying, but they are also solidifying by a little bit of subtraction in that case. And also, by solidifying the rotation, they're weakening the bullpen by getting rid of Carter Capps. AJ Ramos will still be there, but Carter Capps, he's definitely a solid arm, and they are giving him up there. The two minor leaguers that will be going away, Luis Castillo, solid prospect, and first baseman Josh Naylor, who I've heard a lot about. He's supposed to be really good. So the Marlins, they gave up an arm and a leg for Andrew Cashner and Colin Ray and Teron Guerrero, but I think it will be worth it in the end if they do indeed make the playoffs. Cashner, right now, he's 4-7 this year with a 4.76 ERA and 16 starts, and he has a career record of 30-49 with a 3.73 ERA in 7 seasons. He's a 7-year veteran. He has pitched well of late, He's been posting a 2.55 ERA with 23 strikeouts and 17 two-thirds innings over his last three starts. So overall his season, it has not been very good. You look at a record of 4-7, but what I think when I see that record of 4-7 is he's on the Padres. He's not getting much run support, even though the Padres do hit a lot of home runs. He just hasn't been getting the run support that's necessary for him to win. But then you look at the ERA and you see it's 4.76, and you might think, hey, it's a little bit of his fault, but he has been reliable. He's went out there every 5 days for 16 starts this year, and his career record, it's not that good, 30-49, but he has a track record of having a solid ERA, 3.73. He's a nice veteran, 7 seasons in the bigs, and he will definitely help the Marlins down the stretch. And the fact that he has pitched well of late, 2.55 ERA in the last three starts, Marlins are obviously hoping that he continues that trend down the road, and he has been striking out a lot of people, 23 and 17 and two-thirds innings. So that's definitely good for him there. But we need let's talk about the longevity for a second here. 17 and two-thirds innings is not that many for three starts. That's averaging about 5 2/3 innings a start, and that's not what the Marlins need. They need longevity out of Andrew Cashner. He's a veteran. That's part of the reason that they are acquiring him. So he needs to give the Marlins more innings. And I think part of that might be the strikeouts, because he's striking a lot of people, and that's probably going to take a decent amount of pitches to strike somebody out. So that might be part of the problem, but if he pitches to contact, I think, a little bit more, that could drive down the pitch count and allow him to pitch a little bit deeper in the games, because they are losing Carter Capp, so it's going to be a hit to the bullpen. And if the Andrew Cashner, if he can't go deep in the games, that might be a little bit rough on a bit of a shaky bullpen that they have in Miami. Let's talk about Colin Ray for a minute. He is in the second major league season. He is 5-5 with a 4.98 ERA in 19 games this year. He's in a second major league season, so it's a bit of a roll of the dice with him. And he has a 5-5 record, a little bit better than Andrew Cashner, but still not like not what you'd expect for what the Marlins gave up for him. 4.98 ERA, that's worse than Andrew Cashner's, and it's not like it's gotten better as of late. And he could be struggling there too. A change of scenery might fix things, but again, Colin Ray, he pitches in the pitcher's park. He's going to another pitcher's park, and he might not be able to turn around, is what I'm saying. Andrew Cashner, I think he will turn around, but Colin Ray, it might be a little bit interesting with him. And Andrew Cashner right now, he has a $7.15 million contract, and he will become a free agent after the season. Ray is 26 years old. He has a salary of $510,200 and is under team control through 2018. So Cashner, obviously, it's looking like he's just going to be a rental, but Colin Ray, he will be with the team for the next 2 years to come after this season. So I agree that it was probably smart to get Colin Ray, because you don't want to get a rental player for that much. And Colin Ray definitely, I think he has a good future ahead of him, and I think it was smart for the Marlins to pick him up in the deal. And the Marlins right now, they are 55-47, and they are in contention, serious contention, for their first playoff berth since 2003, despite a shaky rotation. Their starters right now are 23-24 with an ERA of 4.4. The Marlins right now, they are tied with the St. Louis Cardinals, who are also 55-47, for the NL's second wild card, and trail the first place Washington Nationals, who are 60-42 by 5 games in the NL East. So I get that they're in contention, and I get that they need Andrew Cashner, they need Colin Ray, and they need to solidify this rotation, but are they really going to make the playoffs? That's the question with me, and is this really going to help them out that much? Is it going to push them over to the top into the playoffs for the first time in 13 years? See, I don't know if that's actually going to be the case by making this trade, because they still are competing with the Cardinals, with the Mets, with the Dodgers, with the Pirates, who are all much better organizations who have options to make bigger, better trades. And I just don't see that the Marlins, that this is pushing them over the top necessarily to make even that second wild card spot, and definitely not to beat out the Nationals and the Mets for the division. I think it's a good try and effort, but I just don't think that this is enough for the Marlins to push themselves over the top into the playoffs, because they are contending right now, but contention doesn't mean success all the time. And I think that's just going to be the case here with the Marlins. And again, the rotation has been shaky, and it was depleted further last week when left-hander Wei-Yin Chen went on the disabled because of a sprained elbow. Cashman and Ray would join Fernandez, Tom Cole, and Adam Conley. And Wei-Yin Chen going on the DL is not helping them at all. They acquired Wei-Yin Chen because this right now, they're in contention. They acquired him because they thought they were going to be in this position, and they were right. They are in this position right now, but the fact that he has a sprained elbow, it could be a little bit of a long-term injury. So Cashman Ray definitely makes this a five-man rotation. It solidifies it. Jose Fernandez has been great. Tom Cole has been shaky. And Adam Conley has been a good left-handed pitcher. Cashman Ray, I don't know how much they'll improve. It'll obviously be better than their previous options, but they gave up a lot for better than their previous options. I think if I was the Marlins, I know that they want to excite their fans, right? But I think 2016 is just not going to be their year. I think they should look to 2017 and try to build a team for 2017, not for 2016. And Andrew Cashner, giving up that much for him, is building a team for 2016 that I don't think is ready to go the distance, ready to make the playoffs at all. I think that the 13-year drought is going to continue, and Marlins fans are going to have to wait 14 years to make the playoffs. And I think if they're going to make the playoffs, it's going to be 2017. It's not going to be 2016. It's just my humble opinion there. Andrew Cashner, he has been the longest tenured Padres player since joining the team in 2012. Said Wednesday that it was sad to see constant turnover among his teammates. And it's been rough on Andrew Cashner, really. He's been with the Padres for 4 years now, and I mean, it's hard to see guys come in, come out, who's going to be my teammate. And he's really just stuck there. He's been there through thick and thin, and he has been solid. He's been decent for the Padres. And the fact that he's seen every move in and move out, now he's part of the moving pieces, it's just a little bit of a struggle. And, I mean, if I'm a player, I'd like to see more guys stay in one place longer in their careers, not just move around. And I think, really, that's what it's been like in San Diego. I think, you know, you can get great relationships with a lot of guys, and there can be lasting friendships for a lifetime, but it's hard to create those relationships when there are so many moving pieces, when you're in a rebuilding club, and it's just hard to create those lasting friendships, because baseball, it's a social sport. There's a lot of time where there's nothing going on, especially if you're a starter, and you want to talk to guys in the dugout when they're moving in and they're moving out. It's kind of hard to make those lasting relationships. And Andrew Cashman's coming to Miami, and he probably, the only person he knows is Colin Ray, so he'll talk to him a lot, but he's going to have some friendship making to do. And once that's done, unless he re-signs with Miami, he's going to have to do that with a new team in 2017. So baseball, it's a social sport. And the social aspect of the game, it definitely has been hard on Andrew Cashner, I think. And hopefully it will get better in the future. But for now, it is definitely not getting better. And this trade is actually the second between the teams this summer. In June, the Marlins acquired all-star reliever Fernando Rodney from the Padres for a minor league pitcher. So the Padres and the Marlins, they seem to have a connection. They hit it up again, and they got a deal done. And Fernando Rodney, he was great with the Padres. He has been great with the Marlins. And they only give up minor league pitchers. So I think that was a solid trade by them. I think this is more of an iffy trade. I would have rather seen them play a little bit safer instead of giving up Cuzart and Caps for what they got. But if they're going for it, they should go for it. And I think the prize in today's deal, really, it's not Caps, it's not Cuzart, it is 19-year-old Josh Naylor. He's a left-handed power hitter. He was taken by the Marlins in the first year of last year's draft. Right now he's batting .269 with 9 home runs in this year for single-A Greensboro. And he really is surprised. He is young, he has a lot of potential ahead of him, and I am really excited to see what he has in his future for the San Diego Padres, because Padres are a rebuilding team, and they got a solid player for a rebuilding team, and I think he'll be there when the Padres are competitive once more, and it will be exciting to see how well he does in the future as his progression keeps going. And left-handed bat, I think that's good for the Padres because their stadium a little bit favors lefties a little bit more than righties, so we will see what Josh Naylor does in the future. Cozart, he went 13-11 in 2014 with Houston and Miami, but has struggled since. This year's 0-1 with a 5.95 ERA in 4 starts with the Marlins, and 3-4 with a 4.09 ERA in 10 starts for AAA New Orleans. Capps is a hard throwing reliever. He underwent Tommy John surgery in March and is expected to be ready for opening day 2017. The deal marks the second high-profile trade this week involving the rebuilding Padres, who sent outfielder Melvin Upton Jr. to the Toronto Blue Jays on Tuesday. The Padres are now 44-58, who enter today's games with the NL's fourth-worst record, also have traded away stars James Shields and Drew Pomerantz this season. We have to take a quick break on Inside MLB, but when we come back, we will be talking about obviously our next topic, and that is going to stick with the Marlins, and Dee Gordon apologizes before rejoining the team. That's next.
I come from where the rivers meet the sea. It's part of why I'm so wild and fancy free. I was early in the crazy way.
We are back in Inside MLB for our final segment, I guess. We have 13 minutes remaining in the show, and we have some more breaking news for you. The D-backs activate outfielder David Peralta, who has a .259 batting average, from the DL after being out since June 15th with a low back sprain. Good news for the Diamondbacks there. And now it is time to talk about a little bit of Dee Gordon and how he is back and how he apologizes to fans and he goes 0-for-4 in return to the Marlins. So let's get into that right now. So Marlins second baseman Dee Gordon issued an apology address primarily to his young fans as he returned from an 80-game suspension for a positive drug test. And I think Dee Gordon, he did this right. He apologized, and he apologized to his young fans first because, I mean, honestly, people, they look up to him. He's a speedster. He has for average. I mean, a lot of people want to be just like Dee Gordon. And the young fans, his image was tarnished after the suspension. His image is still tarnished after the suspension. And this positive drug test does not help his image at all, but he is back. And he said, "I know I let you down, and I am sorry. Complacency led me to this, and I'm hurt. I urge you guys to be more responsible than I am about what goes into your body. I wouldn't wish this on anyone." It's a good statement. He obviously knows he let everyone down, and he's sorry about that. He didn't go into organization, teammates, all that. He just says you, and the you is really directed to his young fans. So the you can be all these different people, but I think the you goes to his young fans, and he's heard about it. I mean, he said it in a statement, and I think it's good that he's urging you guys, the young fans, to be more responsible than he was about what goes into the body, because you are responsible for that, and I think it was good that he said he wouldn't wish this on anyone, because he knows the pain of not being able to play for 80 games and not being able to help out a contending team for 80 games, and he better be hurt, because this team needs him, and needs him in a big way as they look to make a playoff push. And I think perfect statement from Dee Gordon. Wasn't long, but it was sweet and short. He won the National League batting title and stolen base titles last year. He was reinstated before yesterday's game against St. Louis. He was batting leadoff, and he went 0-for-4 in a loss, 5-4 to the Cardinals. And you wonder, though, is that batting title, and is that stolen base title, I don't think that's tarnished at all. But is that batting title tarnished? Is it? Because Dee Gordon with the Dodgers, he was not this great of a batter. But now he's with the Marlins? You question that a little bit. And the fact that he went 0-for-4 yesterday might just be because of rust, but we'll see how he does in the future, because his batting average was amazing last year, but his hitless effort yesterday dropped his season average to .255. Is it tarnished? Is that batting title tarnished? And I always wondered, if somebody's suspended for PEDs, why don't you just take away their batting title from them, right? I know it's from last year, and they don't know if he was taking it last year, but I think he was taking it last year. I think he was sorry he was caught. I think he was hurt about it. And the fact that he still won the batting title, and he still has the batting title to his name, I think it should go to the next clean player on that list. I don't know who it is right now, but I just always think that why would you tarnish the game? I mean, all the baseball writers of the Association of America, they're like, don't let Barry Bonds in, don't let Roger Clemens into the Hall of Fame. Why would Major League Baseball give an award to an undeserving player, somebody that cheated our game? Why would Major League Baseball feel compelled? Why don't they feel compelled? It's a better question. To take away what they earned not the right way. I mean, there are so many clean players in baseball that do it the right way, that train day in and day out, and Didi Gordon cheated the system. He tried to think he thought he was smarter than Major League Baseball. He thought he was bigger than Major League Baseball, but he is not. And the fact that that Major League Baseball isn't doing anything about the batting title just hurts me a little bit. And Manley, if he said he thought he seemed a little quiet and probably a little nervous as the game went on, he seemed more like himself. And I can imagine him being quiet. I mean, he's probably pretty embarrassed to see his teammates and what his teammates think of him. And it'd be nerve-wracking. I mean, you want to go out there and you want to show your teammates, I'm still the same guy. I'm not using whatever drug I used, but I am still the same player. As the game went on, though, it's natural. You feel a little bit more like yourself. I mean, after opening day, it's a little bit like nerve-wracking. Your first at-bat back. But once the game goes on, it's just like last season, or just like early in the season for D, and more like himself. And he tested positive for 2 performance-enhancing substances and was suspended in late April. Gordon acknowledged in April that he unknowingly took the banned substances. Now, I talked about this earlier in late April. I do not buy that he unknowingly took these drugs. I know he had a whole story about this, but you obviously knowingly take something. He knowingly cheated the system, in my mind. And I think he did it last year, too. So take the batting title away. That's all I want. Marlins President David Sampson said then that the second baseman had betrayed the team and its fans. On Wednesday, Sampson said the Marlins are glad to have Gordon back. It's sort of like LeBron James in basketball, how when he went to Miami, Cleveland Cavaliers owner was just like, I hate you. You betrayed us. You betrayed the team. You betrayed the fans. Comes back. Welcome back. Right? Doesn't that sound a little bit like David Sampson about what he's saying about D. Gordon? So you wonder, what's David Sampson's relationship with D. Gordon now? Obviously, he's welcoming back with open arms, but he said this year that he betrayed the team, he betrayed the fans, and you don't ever like to hear yourself saying you're a betrayer, right? You never want to hear that, and you just wonder, how is D. Gordon's and David Sampson's relationship? I definitely would like to know the conversation they had before he came back to the Miami Marlins. And David Sampson said, I believe that America and our fans and our players and us, we're a pretty forgiving society. It's important D. ask for that forgiveness, and he has, and he'll receive that. He's got to continue to work to get himself back in with his teammates and the fans and my son. Okay, so we are a forgiven society, but I think all of us, we should forgive and not forget. Forgiveness is a virtue, right? We all want to forgive. We're taught to forgive, and obviously we need to forgive. We need to learn to forgive. But at some point, you just can't forget what you've just forgiven, right? You can't forget that he, you know, was on these drugs. You just can't. And you can forgive that he was, and you can forgive that because he's back and he's playing, but you cannot forget what he just done, and you cannot forget his image anymore. And in his video that he released, Gordon said he learned from his mistake. But do you believe that's true, or do you think he learned from the mistake of being caught? He never said what mistake. But you wonder, was there a little bit extra thing that he could have said? He could have said, I learned from my mistake of being caught. I'm going to change this and this to not get caught. That might be a little bit of a, what's the word? A little bit of sneakiness on his part. And I think being as he said, I thought being the smallest guy, I would never fail a drug test. I didn't pay attention at all, and I didn't meet the standards. That's my fault and no one else. But don't give up on me. I'm not giving up on D. Gordon. But I don't get how being small affects a drug test. I mean, you could be 2 feet for all anybody cares, and you could still fail a drug test the same as a 6'7" guy could fail a drug test. Does 5'11", 170 make a difference to 6'9", 230? Does that really make a difference? It's just a little bit strange that he brought up his size. A little bit strange to me. To make room on the roster for D. Gordon, the Marlins designated for assignment infielder is also my favorite, Don Kelly, who had 2 triples in Wednesday's victory. Even without Gordon, the Marlins have remained in contention for their first playoff berth since 2003. I love Don Kelly. If you didn't know, he went to Mount Lebanon High School, which is my hometown in Pittsburgh. And it's kind of sad that he has to leave, but he had 2 triples too. Why couldn't they release somebody else? And I think it's impressive that the Marlins, without D. Gordon, they can remain in contention. And I think D. Gordon, he might lift them over the top. Andrew Cashner, Colin Ray, they might all combine and just lift him up. But I don't think it will happen. Last year, D. Gordon batted .333. He stole 58 bases, became an all-star for the second time, and won his first Gold Glove. The season earned him a $50 million 5-year contract in January. I don't think the .333 is real. I think the 58 stolen bases is real. I think the Gold Glove is real. But he just banked $50 million for cheating. Major League Baseball said, take away the batting title. And I think the Marlins should have to rework a contract because you can't allow a guy to get $50 million for cheating. The reward for cheating is way higher than the risk. He gets suspended half the season. He can come back, get $50 million, and possibly make the playoffs. It just doesn't make sense to me. Baseball needs to fix this, and they need to fix it fast because players are cheating. It's obvious that they are cheating. What is Major League Baseball going to do about that? My name is Benson Fechter. Thank you for tuning in. I had a wonderful show with you guys today. I hope that you continue to tune in. Head over to our website, MLBinside.com, and I will see all of you on Monday. Not sure what time yet, but all I know is have a great Friday and have a great weekend. I will see you on Monday. Cause we've done this before, so you come on in. Make yourself at my home, tell me where you've been. Pour yourself something cold.